If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello and welcome to the HP Podcast, your weekly video game show from the three most handsome men you know. I'm Ben, and with me here is Dave, the Canadian Landon. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. I had a false start before the show, and I started off with a stupid joke I've done a million times, but I decided to go a different way. So just to say hello. So, you know, I think that's some improvement. I've been talking to my therapist about self-improvement. I actually don't have a therapist. But yeah, I'm doing all right.
Yeah. So just a little behind the scenes, I guess, for those who will never hear the false start.
Well, now they will.
Yeah. You said from Toronto, and I'm actually now closer to Buffalo, New York.
I said Toronto area.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it's inaccurate. But speaking of which, I was talking to my wife about something before the show, and I was curious to ask you guys.
Wait, does that mean you're closer to us now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
A lot closer.
Love wow. to.
Only a whole country away.
Love yeah. to hear it.
Yeah. I'm very close to Niagara Falls now. Do you guys, do you recall seeing a photo place? Like, you know, those places when we were growing up and they were everywhere. They were in Walmarts. They had their own dedicated stores where you could take like camera film and go and develop photos. Do you have any of those in your small town?
I don't know that we have any like freestanding ones, but I'm pretty sure like if you took a roll of film to Walmart, they would still do it.
Sorry, it's the most random thing, but I wanted to ask you guys because they disappeared overnight in my neck of the woods. Even like the Walmart photo places just completely gone. They still have the kiosks where you can go and you can send photos from your phone. But you know those places where you go and you take like your film or like a digital or a camera and they develop it.
And Robin Williams handles it for you.
And I was saying to my wife, so we're a few weeks away from our daughter being born, and I said she is just going to have no idea what those are, and we're going to explain to them that there were places where you would go and you'd hand them a little piece of plastic and it would produce a bunch of printed pictures, and that's just going to be the most wild thing to her, and it kind of blew my mind thinking about that.
Well, Brandon, you're the youngest of the three of us. Welcome, Brandon. Hello.
Hi.
This is the HP Podcast.
What's going on?
You're the youngest of us, though not that much younger. Do you remember like having a phone that was like you had to walk around the house with it and it had a cord?
Oh, dude,
did you skip that and go just to like the handheld wireless phone?
No. I definitely remember that 100%. And some of my relatives even had the ones that like went around in a dial.
The rotary.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So nice. I'm not quite there yet.
What about the 1 hour photos or not even the 1 hour photos, but maybe our Walmart doesn't have it, Dave. In fairness, I haven't tried to get a roll of film developed in 20 years or so, but maybe our Walmart, I don't know, but you're right. Like there used to be these little huts even that were 1 hour photo.
Yeah.
And you were guaranteed to get your film back in an hour, although I don't think you ever really did.
No.
That was just a marketing thing.
But no, yeah, I definitely remember that. Now you could just do it and it does it itself. We have one of those. I don't know if you guys have one of those like shake it like the Polaroid picture type ones. We got one of those.
Things are so new they're old. Like things are so old that they're new again.
We've come the whole way around. But
well, I mean, now I can take a picture on my phone and hit send and immediately pull up my printer and send it to my printer. If
that's
I want.
True.
Yeah.
And we have somewhere from probably a decade ago, a photo printer.
That somebody those bought. Little things. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody bought it for my wife as a gift for either like, I don't know, when we had a kid or something like that, thinking we'd want to print a bunch of pictures. And I literally think we never opened it. And I was like, we should just sell that. And she's like, yeah, we should. And then it's in the attic.
Have you guys ever developed your own film?
No, no. I've never done that.
I've done one of those dark rooms with all red light and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, dude. The it's weird actually, liquid. Yeah, dude. It's really cool. There's some harsh chemicals involved, but yeah, in high school we had a photography class where there was like a dark room built into the brick wall. You had to like go in a revolving door that would shut out all the light, and I developed some film myself. It was pretty neat. Kind of gives you an appreciation for how it used to be.
The craft.
Yeah.
You don't have that much anymore. Yeah. I know there are still some people who do that. A lot of hipsters probably. but no people with like that need like to have time in their day, you know?
Right, right. It's more of an artisan thing now.
Honestly, I barely even look at pictures I take, and I take very few, so why would I want to get them printed?
I think
I can put them in a book, and my mom can put them in a scrapbook and cut out the edges in a bedazzled pattern or something. Like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't need that.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, people used to scrapbook too, man. I remember.
My mom used to scrapbook a lot. And I think she probably had more scrapbooking supplies than she ever scrapbooked, but, you know, the intention was there.
So, sorry, I just got to ask. I've heard the term scrapbooking, and I'm aware it's a hobby done by women over the age of 40, but what goes in the scrapbook?
Pictures?
Scraps, mostly.
Wouldn't that be a photo album?
Yeah, but it's, like, glorified. Like, you essentially theme the pages around it. Like you would put like a little beach ball that you cut out, or like an umbrella for the beach, or like some seagulls on the page next to it with all these beach photos. So it's like an entire craft where instead of just flipping through pages of photos, it's like a little almost experience on the page. You could also fill it with stuff that's not pictures, like letters or something.
Like a baby birth certificate.
I'd have
or
a picture of Brandon, and I'd just like paste like used condoms and like frogs and stuff and around. Yeah. So that would be the Brandon experience, right?
Brandon approved.
Why are there frogs?
Hey, man, don't ask too many questions. It's part of the experience.
If you don't know, you don't know, Ben.
Okay.
It's one of those.
I'll never know.
Yeah.
Well, this is the HP Podcast. We're a show about video games and photo booths. If you want, you can go over and hang out with us in our Discord over at handsomephantom.com/Discord. We appreciate seeing you there and hanging out, talking about games and honestly just life. There's been a lot of dog pictures in the last week in there. You can go check those out. And I think there were a couple cats maybe. They slipped in there somehow. The filters didn't keep them out.
They always do.
Tim made it in, I think, right?
Yeah,
I think Tim made it in.
You did.
With the Batman, very Batman-esque watching over the city pose on the steps there.
Yeah, you got it.
Also, if you want to help support the show, you can do so over at patreon.com/handsomephantom. You can support the show for as little as $1 a month. Ad-free early access to the show. We appreciate you very much. It helps us really, honestly, like, maybe you don't even care about the ad-free early access. We barely have ads in the show as it is. But actually, I've never listened to the free feeds version that somebody else handles our ads, so I have no idea how many ads we have, so I might have just lied. But anyway, it's really just to support us, help support the channel, help keep the cost going. Just pay the hosting bill, a few $100 a couple times a year, or once a year. So, you know, we need that dollar from you, please. Guys, let's talk about some news. There's a decent bit of news, and it's all really interesting. So let's start off with number one. Gearbox, known for the Borderlands series, is reportedly for sale as its parent company, Embracer, explores various options, including a potential sale following interest from multiple third parties. Embracer is currently undergoing significant restructuring, including the closure of Volition, known for Saints Row, which we talked about last week. Earlier this year, a $2 billion deal with the Saudi government-funded company Savvy Games Group fell through, leading to studio closures and game cancellations. Embracer had been on an acquisition spree, including acquiring Gearbox in February of 2021, valuing the company at up to $1.4 billion. Boys, Gearbox, I think there's been some more news that they had. It's like an official, like there's been some investor packets sent out or whatever. And there's also been some discussion of maybe Gearbox could go back and be independent once again. My biggest hope is that someone will buy them, hand over the rights to Duke Nukem back to Apogee. And I think Gearbox owns the rights still. I'm not sure. And we get that, you know, that ideal world back into our lives. But Dave, Gearbox potentially being up for sale. really want to talk about that, and also the just the fact that Embracer seems to be like on fire potentially.
Yeah, lots to be worried about. Kind of thinking about Gearbox on its own. When I think of Gearbox, I think of Borderlands, like, and I think a lot of people kind of think about this. And I kind of wonder, like, has this franchise peaked? Like, did it peak with Borderlands 2? I love Borderlands 3. I really like the pre-sequel. I don't know that we need a TV show, which we're getting soon. And I'm wondering if Embracer kind of sees the same thing and thinks, like, the biggest IP that this publishing house kind of owns is going to be losing value as we move further and further away from things like Borderlands 2. So I don't know, that might be one of the sort of strategies here. And I do kind of wonder if Gearbox was to separate from Embracer, either come independent or, you know, be purchased by somebody else, how does that kind of affect Gearbox's publishing power? Because I mean, this is a publisher who has, you know, over the past several years published like multiple AA and AAA titles every year. And that costs quite a bit of money. So in thinking about that, I kind of wonder who has the resources to purchase Gearbox. And, you know, based on what I just said, I think it might be a little bit overpriced, a little bit overvalued at this point, and it will require significant capital to keep going at the pace that they have been. Who are the viable suitors? I think about companies like Tencent and Take-Two, Ubisoft or EA. So there's a lot of different possibilities here, but I see nothing but a rocky path forward for Gearbox, which is too bad because, like, I really like Borderlands. Ben, you just mentioned, you know, they currently own the rights to the publishing rights to Duke Nukem and a lot of other interesting franchises.
I think they do.
Yeah. So it's I don't know. I like Gearbox, and I really want to see these franchises continue to go in a good direction, but. I would just say that I don't have the highest of hopes regardless of what happens. You know, we talked about Embracer a few weeks ago and, you know, how in some cases it can be good when you're acquired by a big company like this, but at the same time, your future can often be out of your hands. And I think this is kind of the case here. There are seriously issues happening with Embracer, and it looks like Gearbox might be a victim of that. So
yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Embracer, I don't know how you couldn't see it coming. They were just gobbling up everything in the world. So eventually something's got to go. Brandon, your thoughts on Embracer / Gearbox? And also tell me about the time you met Randy Pitchford.
Well, we were standing next to Randy Pitchford. I don't know that we really met him, so to speak. Well, but
I mean, you have to spice up the story.
We were near him for sure. I think he was getting an Uber or something.
He smelled great.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did sit behind him at an award show in the Microsoft Theater, but I forget what show it was.
Yeah. But yeah. I think the best thing that could possibly happen for Gearbox, and this is best case scenario, would be for them to go independent. I really don't think that, you know, $1.4 billion, I don't know. I'm not saying someone might not swoop in, but I will say that I think that the Borderlands series, which is undoubtedly their biggest series, is still strong, but definitely not as strong as it used to be, in my opinion. Another huge notable title that comes to mind is Battleborn, one of the most top tier shooters of all time.
Yes, of course. You could forget.
All jokes aside, I mean, I really do think this kind of sounds pretty grim, especially after the news that we got last week. I don't know, man. It's really sad that all these companies are being bought up. And you're exactly right, Ben. It's just, we knew this was going to happen. You really cannot sustain that much growth in that small of an amount of time and not have some sort of ramification for it. And unfortunately, now it's kind of rearing its ugly head. So, of Volition and of Gearbox, we clearly have Gearbox being a much more valuable studio in many ways, with a lot more prestige. But that doesn't mean they're not safe from the chopping block. I really, really am a little nervous for Gearbox right now. I would hope that the IP itself would kind of, you know, give it a leg to lean on, but you never really know. I mean, these companies are so large and have so much buying power that even something that costs an estimated $1.4 billion could easily be put in the dirt, in my opinion. So
Well, that 1 point, yeah, that 1.4 billion is what Embracer paid for them about 2 years ago or so. Yeah,
still, that's I know, but yeah. I guess ultimately a statement stands. I mean, like, that is a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. But when it comes to, like, you paid $1.4 billion, right? Does it cost, is it more of a risk? Is it going to cost another billion if you keep the studio around or if you shut it down? It's like, that's the ultimate decisions they're going to be have to be making. And of all the companies to be making it, this is the one that makes me the most nervous for them. I think this is going to be huge. If this ends up, you know, coming to a head and it ends up being negative for them. I don't think they really care about bad PR. They must not, based on last week's news, but I think this one will probably be much more big of a deal if we end up getting some bad news. So,
right. Agreed. It'll be interesting for sure to see how things shake out. I really don't think they'll get shut down. I think the most likely scenario is that somebody else buys them, which may be somebody we like or maybe not, or that they go independent. I think their IP is too valuable to let them just close. Although, you know, then the IP would stay with Embracer if they just closed them. But yeah, I don't foresee that happening, but crazier things have happened. I mean, 2 years ago, I didn't think anybody could ever buy Activision. So you never know. Number two, the Legend of Zelda series producer has confirmed that there are no additional plans for content for the Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. In an interview with Famitsu, he stated that they believe they have fully explored the gameplay possibilities in the game's world. While they won't rule out revisiting the world in the future, there are currently no plans for additional content. Tears of the Kingdom was initially conceived as DLC for Breath of the Wild, but evolved into a separate sequel, becoming the fastest-selling game in the series upon its release earlier this year in May of 2023. Brandon, we'll go to you first because I know about your deep-seated hatred for Nintendo and their business practices. I fell off of Tears of the Kingdom pretty quick. I mean, 30 hours or so. Not because I didn't like it, but because something else came out.
Yeah.
But I remember something along these lines being said about Breath of the Wild as well, that they weren't going to do additional content. And then they did. They announced that at the Game Awards later in 2017, I want to say. But anyway, what do you think? No additional content for a game that has sold 35 plus million copies at this point. You think that's likely?
I mean, honestly, I could see it. When you prefaced it the way you did, I mean, if we look at it through the lens of this initially being a DLC, it would make sense to not have further plans because it originally was planned to be a part of something else. So I don't know, as much as they could just completely cash in, I would agree with them in some ways that I feel like they did diversify their gameplay enough from the first one that maybe they felt like they did all they can do. And don't get me wrong, they did quite a bit. I fell off pretty hard as well, Ben. I played probably about the same amount. And I imagine that I'll do the same thing I did with the last one, which is play it really, really hard, just for weeks and weeks, super hard, and then not play it for a year and then beat it after a year or two. So, I don't know. I've tried to logically understand Nintendo's viewpoint, and what I've found is that purely money does not necessarily motivate them.
That's true.
That's incredibly clear in every decision they make, for better or worse, which, you know, most companies don't operate like that. But there's a lot more going on behind the scenes that clearly my brain cannot understand. Yeah, I guess this is okay. I'm not too worried about it. When I bought the Breath of the Wild DLC, I wasn't blown away by it. And the bike was cool, but that was honestly the coolest part. So I think that keeping it the way it is would not be a bad thing, even if that means that they missed out on a little bit of money because they already have a huge piece of the pie. So,
Dave, I bought the Breath of the Wild DLC, and I'm pretty sure I've never played it. But anyway, what do you think? You were the one of the three of us who did finish Tears of the Kingdom. Are you itching for more? Do you think that would be something you'd enjoy?
Well, first of all, just because we're talking about Breath of the Wild, I just have to say, 2023 has to be going down in history as one of the best years in gaming. Oh, I'm thinking about Zelda, Diablo, Final Fantasy, Spider-Man still to come, Starfield,
Baldur's Gate.
Hogwarts, Baldur's Gate. Man, it's just, we've been spoiled this year. And I mean, we spent the last couple of years talking about like how little we've been getting because of, you know, COVID delays and all that stuff. But it seems like our patience is finally paying off, because it's just, it's weird to think about. We had a Zelda game earlier this year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
it's like funny crazy, though, because 2017 was the last year I remember people being like, wow, what a year.
Yeah.
And that was when Breath of the Wild came out.
Yeah.
So if you get a Zelda game, it's probably going to be a good year.
Not even to mention Hi-Fi Rush. I mean, man, oh man.
Yeah, let's not mention that. You're right.
I have to say, I'm glad this news story came out, because I didn't actually realize that Tears of the Kingdom was originally planned as DLC. And it's kind of ironic that we're having this conversation. But it totally makes sense that it was planned that way. Because, you know, usually these mainline entries in the Zelda series aren't like actual continuations or sequels, you know, unless you're talking about Majora's Mask. So that's interesting to hear. But I do suppose that, and I think we just talked last week about possible DLC for Tears of the Kingdom, but I think we probably shouldn't have had expectations that high for any Tears of the Kingdom DLC, just given what we got from Breath of the Wild. I mean, that was fairly minimal. Like, there were some trials and stuff, and obviously people think about Breath of the Wild DLC and it's really the motorbike. And I mean, I think about it, and like the two of you have just said, you haven't even finished the game, but you've put in, you know, around 30 hours. Are there really that many people who have run out of things to do in Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom? When it comes to games, I feel like this is one that doesn't really need DLC. You know, I know with the way the gaming industry has gone, we've all kind of expected, you know, some kind of post-launch content. So I understand why people have that kind of expectations, but I don't think we should be disappointed. And at this, you know, taking it a step further, I think this is something we should celebrate, because clearly we got everything the developers had right up front at the vanilla cost. So there's a lot to do in this game. You know, for people who are saying they finished everything and they want brand new content, they're probably lying, or, you know, you're in the minority. But yeah, I think this is something to be celebrated. I think this is a good thing. And yeah, there's still lots and lots of stuff to do in Tears of the Kingdom for most people. So I'm okay with this. I'm okay with it, with this myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay with it too. And it's not Nintendo's practice. I mean, they certainly have done it, but it's not very common for like mainline games for them to have DLC. Again, we just talked about Breath of the Wild and they had DLC there. But it's not like as money grubbing as they can be in other ways, this doesn't seem to be one of them. Really, my main criticisms with Nintendo is that their technology is backwards, and their way of doing things, and their group chat and stuff like that is backwards. But, and that they waited 3 years to enable the Bluetooth on the Switch for some reason. But yeah, I respect developers who were like, we gave you the game we wanted to give you. And by the way, we sold more copies of it than any other game has sold this year. You're welcome. Please don't ask for more. And it's also respectable knowing that they know probably a good 30% of people would go ahead and buy that DLC. I bought the DLC for Breath of the Wild a full year or whatever it was after I finished the game, and I never played it. But I bought it because I knew it was quality. And, you know, my intention wasn't to not play it, but I didn't play it. A side thing, tangentially, today, this very day, in the year of our Lord 2023, my 9-year-old son beat Breath of the Wild.
Whoa, dude! Yeah. Finally, good for him. I'm really proud of him. Honestly, seriously,
he's been playing it on and off. He's been playing other stuff too, but he's been playing it on and off. And he today was like asking me, like, okay, a while back he was like, how do I can't beat Ganon. I'm like, you have like 6 hearts, dude. Go do a bunch more shrines. Go get the Master Sword. Like, you can't just. And so he did, like, for months now he's been just going and grinding shrines, and finally went and got the Master Sword. And yeah, he told me tonight he beat Ganon, I think, on his first try.
Dude,
back
what
in
a,
after
what a fucking yeah. G that what fight G. That fight, the beginning of the fight, isn't necessarily the easiest thing.
Yeah. And then he immediately, of course, asked me if he could borrow Tears of the Kingdom.
I was going to say, so when does the next journey begin?
Tell them to play the DLC so you can get your money's worth.
Dude, actually, that is a damn good idea. Yeah.
I think he's ready to move on. He's been playing it for probably more hours than the three of us combined did, honestly.
I would bet.
Yeah. All right, number three. Ubisoft's upcoming game, X Defiant, may see a release window between mid-September to mid-October as the company works through the certification process with PlayStation and Xbox. Producer Mark Rubin provided an update explaining that Ubisoft initiated certification in July with an initial aim for an August release. However, due to the game needing more work than anticipated, it's now likely to release later in the fall. The plan is to, and they were very open with all this process. The plan is to submit X Defiant for certification again in just under 2 weeks. If it passes, the game could be officially released in middle to late September. He expects that the game will receive a conditional pass, which will require a day one patch, which could push the release to early to mid-October. He acknowledged the X Defiant development process hasn't followed the standard rules for game releases, as they've allowed millions of players to experience the game while it's still in progress. This unconventional approach has influenced the release schedule and the aim to release the game as soon as it's ready. Brandon, you and I checked out X Defiant, one of the betas earlier in the year.
Yeah.
And I think we talked about it on the show, but, you know, we both were kind of like, okay, yeah, it's a shooter game. But anyway, I just wanted to talk about the game, I guess. And sure. Two, just how open and honest they were with like, hey, we submitted it. They told us it wasn't ready. We're going to keep working on it.
Yeah.
Like that's a level of transparency we don't really all that often see.
Yeah, that's honestly pretty refreshing. And I don't know if that's like room for concern or, I mean, not that they're being transparent, but as far as the game on console in general. But yeah, my thoughts on the game initially were that it played pretty well. And that it reminded me a whole hell of a lot of Call of Duty in many ways, for better or for worse. The TTK was minuscule, and that's mm-hmm. both a good and a bad thing. But no, this is really cool and refreshing to, you know, get a peek behind the curtain without having to get it leaked something of that nature. So, I mean, I wish the best for them. I think that they have a decent game here, and I think it could potentially do really well. Good for them. I'm hoping it goes well. I'm really wondering what the holdup is, though. If you guys had any guess, do you think, now I'm not poo-pooing on Xbox, but we talked last week about some parity problems. Do we think that might be it, or I don't know. It's just got it on my mind lately. Let's say that.
I didn't add it in, but I'm pretty sure that they were rejected by both PlayStation and Xbox.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think the article I pulled this info from specifically said that they were both platforms turned them down.
I wonder did it mention in the article whether it was last gen as well?
I don't recall.
Okay.
No, I don't remember. I could look it up while we're asking Dave what he thinks of X Defiant. Do you have any interest in X Defiant, Dave?
I do. I really do. I've always been a very forthcoming Ubisoft shill. So I think it's cool that we're gonna get like a competitive Call of Duty style shooter sort of in the Ubisoft world. So this is cool. And I got to agree with you guys. I really like this approach they're taking in terms of how transparent they're being. Mark Rubin, I think a lot of this information just came from him posting on Twitter and people were commenting and he was just kind of responding to those comments. So I think this is cool. And it's really interesting to see for Ubisoft, because I mean, this is a big, big publisher. So to see them be this sort of interactive and engaging with fans is cool to see. I think another thing that's important to note from this is Ruben did specifically say in this thread that there will not be a shadow drop. I think a lot of people were hoping that, you know, it would get approved and then boom, they'd say, okay, it's available now. But those of us who were hoping for an Apex style release aren't going to get it. And that's a little disappointing, but at the same time, it allows them some time to do some marketing and it allows gamers sometimes to do some preloading and stuff like that. So yeah, I like the direction they're going with this. I'd be curious to hear why they were rejected. I do think that behind the scenes, they may have been stalling a little bit because I do think that Modern Warfare 3's release and them kind of waiting to hear what Activision was actually going to do with Call of Duty this year, it would have been wise for them to hold out and see what was actually going to materialize with that. So whether they were waiting for that or not, I think the fact that they now know Activision's cards are all played out. We know what we're getting for from Call of Duty in 2023 and 2024. Because I think the launch success for X Defiant very much rides on what Activision's doing with Call of Duty. So, yeah. But in any case, I'm excited to play this game. It is free to play.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be free to play. And just to follow up on that from earlier, it looks like it's PC, PS5, and series consoles for Xbox.
Okay, so it's
not last gen.
It's not last gen. See, that would have been my other guess, was that maybe they were having some performance issues, but that's kind of an enigma to me then.
Well, I mean, they could be having performance issues.
True.
You know, just because it's not on a last gen console doesn't mean anything.
I guess.
Also, this is a little bit of a tangent, but Dave, you mentioned Shadow Drop, and I was just thinking the other day about how incredibly hype it was when Apex dropped, because, you know, yeah, X Defiant would have been a Shadow Drop if they just released it without a date, but we've known about X Defiant. Brandon and I, at least, have played X Defiant, and Apex, we literally had never even heard of it.
Right.
And it was like, it's available right now.
Yeah.
It was, that's crazy.
Love this still Shadow Drop, man. Dude. Yeah. To kind of piggyback off that, man, and the success and the ups and downs of Call of Duty, I've been seeing so many people that every time I turn on Twitch, they're on Call of Duty. Like, that's their game. Mm-hmm. A ton of people have migrated to Apex or Counter-Strike or Valorant. Yep. Like, I'm seeing it a lot with people that literally never, ever played other games. Like, rarely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is.
Interesting. Interesting times for sure.
All right, boys, here's the big news. The big talk of the town today. Number 4. Unity is introducing a new fee called the Unity Runtime Fee for games created with the Unity engine, starting from January 1. This fee will be imposed on games that have surpassed specific revenue and lifetime installation thresholds in the past year. The fee amounts and the thresholds differ based on the developer's Unity subscription type. For Unity Personal and Unity Plus Plus users, the thresholds are $200,000 in annual revenue and 200,000 lifetime installations. For Unity Pro and Unity Enterprise accounts, the thresholds are $1 million in annual revenue and 1 million lifetime installations. The fee amounts also vary, with Unity Personal developers having to pay the most per installation above the threshold, which is 20 cents per installation, while the Unity Enterprise accounts pay the least at 1 cent per every installation above 2 million. And this is, I know this is just a lot of numbers and stats and stuff thrown at the audience here, but go look up a graph or something if you need to, if it helps. Developers in emerging markets received reduced fees, with Unity Personal accounts paying 2 cents per installation above the threshold and enterprise accounts paying half a cent per installation. Starting January 1st, existing games created with Unity will also be subject to runtime fees if they meet the defined thresholds. It's important to note that these fees do not apply to non-gaming applications. Unity has introduced this fee because the Unity runtime is installed each time a game is downloaded, and it believes an initial installation-based fee allows creators to benefit from ongoing financial gains. Unity is also discontinuing its Unity Plus subscription tier, and existing Plus subscribers will be offered an opportunity to upgrade to Unity Pro for a year at the Plus price, and then after that, you're screwed. Just to add on to this, just a little bit more information that Stephen Totillo was able to gain. He's a reporter. He said, this is from Twitter, quote, "I got some clarifications from Unity regarding their plan to charge developers per game install. If a player deletes a game and reinstalls it, that's two installs and two charges.
What the
fuck? It's the same if they install it on two devices. If it is a charity game, so like the Humble Bundle or something like that, or a bundle in general, it is exempted from the fees."
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell.
With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Boys, this is... There have just been devs all over the place, you know, talking about this. And especially, it brings up the Game Pass conversation. Dave, let's go to you first. I don't think you've worked with any game engines. I've barely worked with a game engine. I have very little knowledge of how these things work. But what I do understand a little bit more is dollars and cents. And this doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect there is not precedence for something like this, especially in the video game industry.
Not to this degree, no.
Yeah, I will say that I like that it appears to be scaled, and it allows smaller developers to continue to utilize Unity, which seems to be fairly popular amongst, you know, smaller creators or people new to kind of making games and maybe have a bit less of a budget. So I think it's good in that respect. I think this allows Unity to collect and profit and hopefully continue to grow and iterate and evolve and push Unreal when it comes to sort of these game engines, because competition amongst these two sort of engines is nothing but good things for, it means nothing but good things for gamers and creators alike. As I was reading this, I was kind of wondering how revenue was going to be reported. I'm not sure if that was explained in the number of downloads and sort of installations of that sort of little Unity packet, but
I'm pretty sure there's a, sorry to cut in, but I'm pretty sure there's an when you install the game, the engine tells, like, reports back.
Right.
So unless people were downloading it without or installing it without an internet connection, it would tell them.
It's and someone's going to find a way to hack this and make it so it doesn't install that little tracker thing to report back to Unity exactly.
PC maybe, but what about console games?
Yeah, I don't know. It's all a bit funky, isn't it? The way this is kind of being done, and I'm not sure what the end goal is. Was Unity kind of struggling? I don't think so. They seem to be a fairly popular engine. So, I mean, I've tried to outline the positives. I think I have from my perspective, but I'm curious to think what you guys think, especially you, Ben, having worked with, you know, a smaller game developer and creator on how this might impact the industry, not just as a whole, but especially when it comes to those smaller developers and creators.
Yeah, so just to clarify, we don't work with Unity or with Unreal. We work with a little game maker engine. Basically, you pay them a license fee, and then you're done. My thing about this is that, okay, let's say going forward at this date, whatever, you decide to impose these new fees, then guess what? You chose to do that. Granted, there's people who've been working on games for years, whatever, but at least it's like a forward thing. My biggest problem really is that some of this is retroactive, that people within this year who have sold, you know, however many games are going to owe 2 cents per game back to Unity. That's the one thing that's really disheartening to me, is that they're like, hey, we want some more of that money you already made. The thing you signed up for and the fees you thought you were getting, we're actually going to take some of that now. The other thing is that this kind of, it really screws people who have Game Pass deals. So if you have a game on Game Pass and it has a large install, I mean, that's 25 million plus people who have the potential to download it. And if you have Ultimate, it's on two devices, potentially, or three. If you have an Xbox X, an Xbox Series S, and a PC, like, I've installed stuff on both of my consoles for sure. So like that really screws people over there who have their games on a subscription service. I just think that them saying like, okay, here's the deal. If you sell over this many copies, you owe us this much. And if you don't sell over this many copies, you owe us this much. That's fine. But then to say, oh, and also, anytime somebody installs the game, we also want some of that too. We don't care if they install it, delete it, install it, delete it, install it, delete it 10 times in a month. We're going to take 2 cents every time. Those are my big problems with it, is it's like there's no extra work on Unity's end.
Yeah.
To be able to make that happen. Brandon, I'll let you chime in.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with you completely, Ben. I just think this is a bad look, and Unreal Engine 5 every single day is looking more and more enticing for every single developer that gets his hands on it for free. But yeah, I don't, this is just a strange move. I think that if Unity came out and said, hey, essentially Unity 2.0, we got a whole new thing going, it's a whole new price point, it's like, I feel like if there was extra value added in some way that was like exponential or measurable, I feel like the price point would be less of a hit, and it would make more sense to me. But I agree with Ben completely. It's like, how many games have I downloaded on Game Pass that I have just downloaded, played for about 5 minutes, and then been like, nah, I'm good. It's just, it doesn't make sense the way they're doing it. And I feel like it's very, I don't know, wanting a piece of the pie because you essentially helped this game developer is perfectly reasonable. Wanting a piece of the pie and some dessert, double dessert, essentially, is what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know. This is weird. This is very weird. And I just feel bad for a lot of small developers, because even though some of them might not be affected, it's directly affecting a lot of people. I mean, Unity's huge. So I think that if there was a notable difference, some sort of improvement, some sort of incentive to, you know, get on board with this new pricing package, I feel like it would be less insulting. But as it stands now, I don't really understand what they're trying to do aside from suck money out of people that might not have it. So,
you know how review bombing exists?
Oh, yeah.
People get pissed off at a developer.
Download bombing. Dude, literally, you could fucking tank a developer financially if you did something shitty on a game, okay? And the public...
Or even if you didn't do something shitty and people just didn't like it.
Yeah, dude, imagine you get you and all your friends, $0.02. And it's shitty, but like, this is the way it works. This is also why this makes no sense. No sense. If you want money for what you helped them with, fine. But the download thing is just like asinine as far as I'm concerned.
I saw a little conspiracy theory earlier today. And of course, this is just a conspiracy theory. But apparently the guy who's the president of Unity was the president of EA or some big wig at EA whenever they were like the worst, you know, voted the worst company in America.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Multiple times. But a couple of days ago, he sold off like a gigantic amount of shares. Like within the last 2 or 3 days, he sold off a ton of shares.
Dude,
probably knowing this was coming, obviously.
Dude, do you know what that is? Insider trading.
Insider
dude.
Trading.
How about
right.
that?
Yep.
Take his ass to jail.
Yeah. So, Dave, I guess I can understand some of the positives you mentioned, and I even agree with them that if they needed to make a new structure to be able to survive and to be able to keep providing this engine for people, then I totally understand that. But I just think the way they're going about it is pretty shitty. And yeah. I still don't know if I were picking between, you know, Mr. all of a sudden very friendly Epic Unreal Engine, who's like, hey, you don't owe us anything for 500 years and 10 million sales, or, you know, it's not really that, but whatever it is, you know, there's a big difference now between picking Unreal and picking Unity.
Yeah, and the retroactive thing, just to kind of put it into context, some of the bigger games that utilize Unity, Beat Saber, Cuphead, and Pokemon Go.
Genshin Impact.
That's insane.
Insane, bro. Why would they not want a piece of that pie? Like I get it logically, but it just, I think it's an oversight, man. And I wouldn't be surprised if not only you see a big backlash from small developers, but large developers as well. Yep. I mean, just as much as this cuts into...
Oh, it's mostly been small developers so far.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if moving forward, you know, as it stands, if we saw less interest in Unity, because I mean, hey, just as much as Unity wants a piece of this money, like, it's so crucial for the developers to, you know, make the money as well. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're already getting, you know, usually at least 30% cut off the top of every sale from the store holder, whether it's Xbox or Switch or, you know, PC, Steam or whatever. So that's part of it. And I saw a thing that said that the people, like, this is not only going to affect if somebody buys the game and installs it, but if they get it on a subscription, which I mentioned, if there's a demo that runs on Unity, that'll be an install. And also pirated games, which I'm not condoning piracy, but we all know there's a lot of people who aren't paying shit for their games, right, who are going to end up actually costing the developers money rather than just a net zero.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I feel like most of the negative is going on the developer here and nobody else, which is sad. So also sidestep before you move on, because you said Apex, Titanfall 2 got an update. Did you guys see this?
Did it?
It got an update. The servers are fixed.
Out of nowhere?
I don't know what's going on. There's been a lot of rumors floating around that there's some sort of resurgence, but I guess maybe it's the whole Xbox fixing the Modern Warfare 2 servers that kind of made them realize that, you know, these old games can't have life again. But yeah, I guess the out of nowhere, after like, what, how many years? I don't even know. A lot of years. The Titanfall 2 works again. So
it's crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe I should give it another shot. I never really played the multiplayer. Oh, wait, there wasn't. Was there multiplayer in 2?
I think so.
It was one that didn't have a campaign.
One, obviously. Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. One was pretty much only multiplayer, but
yeah. Yeah. All right. Number 5. Unless there's anything else to say about Unity. Okay. Starfield appears to have set a new record for Xbox Game Studios titles, boasting over 1 million concurrent players on its launch day across all platforms. The official Starfield account, this is a couple days ago, tweeted that the game has been played by over 6 million individuals by the end of its first official day of availability, making it the largest Bethesda game launch to date. Although Xbox hasn't officially confirmed it, this likely makes Starfield the biggest day one launch for any Xbox Game Studios title, surpassing the previous record set by Forza Horizon 5. Starfield's early access release on Steam saw a daily concurrent user peak of approximately 250,000 users, indicating strong initial interest. Now, that was early access, remember. The game's official release on various platforms, including Game Pass, attracted a significant number of new players with a peak of more than 330,000 on Steam alone, several days after it was released for all players. Whether Starfield will surpass Forza Horizon 5's milestone of 10 million players in the first week, described as the biggest first week in Xbox history, remains to be seen. I assume maybe even by the time this show comes out, we'll hear something from Xbox if that's the case, and I think it probably will be. But I wanted to throw this here at the end because we'll get into what we're playing too. But Brandon,
yeah,
let's start you off.
Sure.
Talking about just the success first of Starfield.
No, absolutely. I think this is good for the entire gamer ecosystem in general, but also a really good thing for Bethesda and Microsoft. They really needed something that won this year. And I feel like if you take nothing else into account, the numbers really speak for themselves here. After the stinker that we had earlier in the year with Redfall, this is really, really, really what they needed. They did spend an astronomical amount of money on advertising, and that obviously completely paid off. It's been an interesting launch, I'll say that. For many reasons. We touched on it a bit last week. There's been a lot of drama around it, but always glad to see these studios winning, even the big boys, because either way, Bethesda makes some good games. So now this is good. And Forza last year, Starfield this year, Xbox is looking good, man. And I'm happy
another
about
Forza
it.
This year too.
Yeah. 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 So they're not even done yet. I won't talk about it extensively and I'm not going to shift, but I'm hearing some good news about Motorsport as well.
Yes, sir.
Some early previews and stuff. So, this is awesome. Good news.
Dave, your thoughts on the gigantic launch? We all knew it was going to be big, but it's nice to see it was actually big.
Well, first of all, let's go easy on Redfall. You know, it's not that bad. I've been thinking about getting back into it. Soon,
oh, really?
You
know, maybe in January or so?
2 to 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be improved by then. But I've been kind of thinking about like Bethesda and was Doom Eternal, was that launched prior to the acquisition or was that the first big Bethesda launch under Microsoft?
That was in 2020, so it would have been before the acquisition.
Yeah, before.
So that game came out like right as like all the lockdowns started and everything.
Yeah, it came out and I know it caused a lot of issue because it came out around the same time as Animal Crossing and there was a bunch of people who wanted to go and pick up the game and there was, you know, stores were closed and stuff. So that was a funny time. What a weird time.
Funny is one way to describe it.
It's those two. It was like Barbie and Oppenheimer coming out like on the same weekend, and then you have Doom and what polar opposites.
Except there weren't like hundreds of thousands of people dying.
Exactly. So this is kind of the first big Bethesda release under Microsoft, and you know it's such a big success, and it has so many concurrent players. And I think it is important to note that you mentioned in the article there that there was a lot of people who were playing early access, which mean that people chose to pay additional money to play this before it came on Game Pass. So I think that's a win. But I do wonder, and we'll probably never know this, what does this look like financially for Bethesda versus Fallout 4's launch or Doom Eternal's? Because we know that, you know, the dollar and cents that are going back and forth aren't the same because, you know, a lot of this is happening under day one on Game Pass and people just aren't paying full price for this game. This is a huge, huge win for Microsoft. It's a big, big win for Game Pass. It's a big win for customers and gamers. But I wonder if it's a big win for Bethesda. We'll probably never know, but in any case, it's.
Well, what do you mean with that? You mean financially?
Yeah, because I mean, you know, Fallout. If you wanted to play Fallout 4 at launch, you had to pay full price for it. It wasn't on Game Pass.
I've just always assumed like the purse strings are held at Microsoft, and if Bethesda needs some money, they ask for it and they get it.
Yeah,
that's my assumption. I don't know.
Probably. Well,
also, something to keep in mind is just as much as I think a lot of people are playing this on Game Pass. What does it say? Early access. So 250,000 users. Is that what it says here?
250,000 users.
Early access
on Steam.
So that
was concurrent on Steam.
I guess Steam's taking a piece of that as well. But
yeah, they are. Yeah.
Even so, that's what's that? The $100 version?
Yes.
So,
but anybody playing early access on, let's say they were playing on Game Pass and they were playing early access, they paid $30. To rent that game for 5 days extra.
Right. So I'm not saying it evens itself out with people not buying it for full price, but I'm saying it probably would help quite a bit, this new trend we're seeing and getting it early. But
sorry, well, I know Dave. That. Yeah, sorry, Dave. Sorry. I know that that Forza's early access launch, I think there were over 1 million. I might be pulling that out of my ass, but I'm pretty sure they said there were over 1 million people played early through game, and that's not on Steam. So if 1 million people paid $30 extra for the premium version of Forza, I cannot imagine that less people through Game Pass paid extra for the early edition. That's a lot of money right there.
Yeah, that is a lot of money for the same game early.
Yeah.
I just hope Todd's okay, by the way, is all I'm saying. I hope it's okay.
And I said it in passing that that's a rental, but really, if you have Game Pass, and this is where the subscription thing gets a little shaky to me. I love subscription services, but this is where it gets a little shaky. I'm paying $15, $17, whatever it is a month for Game Pass Ultimate. I love it. I have no regrets. But when you say to me, okay, in 5 days, you can play this game for no extra money on top of your subscription, but pay me $30 right now, and you can play it 5 days early. And then if you ever decide to cancel your Game Pass, you've got shit on your account. You don't have access to the game anymore. But you can play it 5 days early. Like I'm like, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Dude, someone I work with did that.
Yeah.
He's playing it on Game Pass and he's like, yeah, I just paid them $30 and I could play it early. But I was like, I guess, man, whatever you want to do. Yeah. But
we did talk last week about how un-Bethesda it was for so many review copies to have gone out in the wild like they do. They did. Mm-hmm. But I really think that was probably part of that strategy to kind of push for as many early access purchases as possible. And I think it paid off. I think it really paid off for them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Well, now that we are done talking about Starfield, let's talk about Starfield. Dave and Brandon, I had played a little bit by the time we recorded last week through the early access, which I did not pay extra to rent. Thank you to Bethesda once again. But you guys have been playing it. Let's start off with you, Dave. And actually, we can just all collectively chime in on this conversation. The latency might get us a little bit. We'll see. But let's go ahead and start with you, Dave, talking about your time in the Constellations.
Yeah, so important delineation here. I have been playing on Series S, and I'm happy to report that it runs great. Obviously, if you're on Series X or a high-end PC, you're going to get a better experience. But for a Bethesda title running on sort of half last-gen hardware, I was really impressed with how it looked and how it ran. 30 frames per second. But it was fairly stable. Did notice some hitches here and there, but no real kind of game-breaking issues or anything that was kind of immersion-breaking or even was just funny or weird. So I think this was pretty well reported, and I'm happy to say that I had a similar, very good sort of experience with sort of a day one Bethesda launch. So ran really well. I like the opening hours. I think the gunplay is really good. This is something we noted when that first gameplay trailer came out. Is the Fallout and Skyrim sort of first person combat, for me anyways, always felt a little bit, the melee always felt a little bit floaty, and the gun combat in Fallout always felt, you know, kind of weird, and that kind of played into the weapons you're using. But in Starfield, I'm really enjoying the gunplay. It kind of felt like a slightly improved version of what I had in Cyberpunk, which was pretty good. But yeah, I really like this. There's a lot of different weapons that you get right off the bat, so I enjoyed that. But generally speaking, this game just hasn't really kind of grabbed me the way I hoped it would. I don't know what it is. I don't know if I'm just not kind of interested in playing a game like this right now, but kind of 5-6 hours in, and I don't know. There's a feeling I remember having in Fallout where I would just kind of wander the wasteland, and I'd put, you know, the really cool soundtrack on, and I'd just kind of stumble upon shit. I am aware that you can do that in Starfield, but I'm also a little surprised at how much time I spent navigating menus to kind of move through different, you know, star systems and galaxies. And again, I know you can kind of just manually fly somewhere, but I thought it was kind of weird where, like, you know, you open your star map and you select a system and you hit travel and load screen, and you get there and you find the planet. And, you know, once again, the simplest way to kind of get to where you want to go is open your star map again and go planet and select it and load screen. And I don't know, it just felt very not Bethesda RPG, and I that took me out of the experience a little bit.
Dave, let me cut you off real quick and ask you, since you're playing on Series S and we're talking about load screens, what are the loading times like on Series S?
They're fine. They're quick.
Okay. They're very quick. I was just curious because I'm playing on PC, so I haven't even tried it out.
The load times aren't the issue. It's just more like, I don't know, I think about like those moments where you kind of get lost in the wasteland in Fallout, and those kind of moments of serenity in Skyrim, where you're just kind of wandering and stumbling upon stuff. I just felt like my early hours with Starfield have felt very transactional. Go here, walk up to this person, fast travel to the next place. And I don't know. I just, it hasn't had the immersion that I've felt. I, you know, the voice acting, all that kind of stuff, I've spent some time doing just kind of the intro, some of the mainline stuff. I've done some side content as well, just with, I do like how like activities just kind of pop up into your quest log just by overhearing people talk. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I just kind of followed that path in a couple instances, and I liked all that, but just, I don't know, thus far there hasn't been enough to make me want to spend dozens of hours in Starfield at the moment. So curious to hear what you guys think though.
Yeah. And I will totally agree with you on the loading. It feels a little much to me, but with that said, the further I get into it, the less it bothers me, because I'm like, I really don't want to fly over there. Why would I want to do that? I don't know if I agree with this, but apparently other people did. Your statement about the first, you know, you've got what, 5 or 6 hours into it. The thing that a lot of reviewers were saying was the first 5 or 6 hours are the worst part of the game until it opens up, and then you really get the experience. I had a blast in those first few hours, so for me that wasn't the case, but clearly for some people it is. And then the other thing, you're talking about how you walk past people and you get quests in your quest log immediately. That drives me crazy because I want to go do everything. Like I'm like, oh, well, now I got to go over there and do this. I want them to be able to talk to that person and accept their quest. But I think that's a good thing because you don't have to do it all. But some people were saying, you know, rush the main storyline, get to New Game Plus, and then go do everything, whatever. Then I've seen some pushback against that too. I'm kind of doing a mix. I'm just playing however I want to play. If I want to go to do the next mainline mission, I go do it. If I want to do a side mission, I do it. However, whatever I'm feeling at the moment is what I've been doing. But Brandon, talk about your experience. I know that you were also not a fan of the loading screens, but other than that, how have you found it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of where Dave's at. This game really has not grabbed me in almost any way at all. In fact, you know, this is the what you've been playing. I've played some Starfield. I've probably played about 9 hours. And I don't really think I've enjoyed most of the time I've had with it.
Holy shit.
And
I guess show's over.
And
thanks for listening.
Genuinely.
Sign up on Patreon.
And I agree with you, Ben. After you've been playing for 30, 40 hours, would it be tedious to fly into the planets? Yes. But I cannot help but think about games like No Man's Sky when I'm playing a game like this. And in so many ways, No Man's Sky is so much more engaging to me than some of the experiences that I've had in this game. Mm. Now, that being said, there are many things that I wish were in No Man's Sky that Starfield has. It's kind of like a trade-off. Like, honestly, if I can mush the two games together, I think they'd both be better for it. But I agree with Dave. I don't want to just brush over this. I feel like a lot of the intrigue is lost on me when I'm just going into a menu every single time I need to go somewhere. It feels so uninteresting. I'm just like, okay, I'm in this planet. I just finished this quest. I talk to somebody, I get this mission, I open up my menu, I fly to some other system by just going into a menu and holding X, and now I'm suddenly in this system, okay, and I'm floating in front of this planet, and then I click on the planet in my menu, and then I fly into the planet. I don't know, it just hasn't felt, and maybe it's because I'm approaching it like other Bethesda games. And I feel like that's part of the problem for me, is that I really am approaching it like I can just walk around. And not that you can't walk around. There are points of interest. They're procedurally generated. But I feel like it's not as rewarding as just like, I need to train my brain to go from mission to mission to mission. And I feel like that's kind of one of the weakest parts for me, is that, you know, I loved doing what Dave said, throwing on the radio and just walking around and seeing what I could find. And you can do that in that game. I don't want to minimize that. It just doesn't feel the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's been very confusing for me, a lot of it. I don't really know when it's going to grab me. I want to keep playing it. I do. And I will keep playing it. But yeah, I think there's a lot of depth. And I feel like a lot of it's lost on me, like the ship combat, for instance. Aside from just doing dogfights in space, I feel like this game could have equally not had that almost at all, and it wouldn't have been that much different of an experience.
Yeah, I know that if you fast travel a lot, and especially if you've already been somewhere, you can pretty much almost not experience any fighting in space other than the story parts that are fighting in space. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
I wish that there were more reasons to have to fight in space, but
yeah,
I mean, I'm totally the opposite of you guys. I mean, I definitely agree with some of the criticisms. They're just not bothering me. I'm probably between 35 and 40 hours in at this point, and I'm loving every hour I play more than the last hour that I played.
Gotcha. Maybe not. Go ahead.
Not literally on like a 60-minute rotating basis, right, or anything, but like I'm liking it more and more and more as it goes on.
Yeah. And honestly, there's not a lot of hand-holding, I feel like, for a lot of this, and I feel like that's been very jarring for me as someone who has recently had a lot of experience with first-person shooters, but not many other mechanics other than that. Going to a keyboard and not getting my handheld very much has been kind of confusing to me. I popped it on my Series X and really enjoyed the ship combat significantly more on controller than mouse and keyboard, but...
It's probably the inverted controls that are throwing you off, honestly, for the ship fighting part. Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I think that the gunplay is fine. I think that that's probably some of the most fun I have in the game. And maybe this is a problem with me. I think it is a problem with me. But most of the time, I just don't give a fuck about what anybody's saying to me. I just want to wander around and look for shit and find cool shit. And like occasionally, usually I end up caring about the side quests a lot more than I do the main quests. But I'm having the most fun with this game when I'm just like killing a group of pirates in some large base, and less when I'm talking to a group of people about some spinning orb in a room. I don't know. I don't know. It hasn't grabbed me yet. I do think that overall, it's, you know, it is a quality experience, and a lot of the discourse online has been completely unmerited. But I think that in many ways, for better or worse, this is very much a Bethesda game. And I mean that at polar opposites, for good and bad. I feel like this is like it shines and it's its dullest at the exact same time for the exact same reason. So I want to keep playing it for sure. I am interested. I hate the idea of things getting good, or like, you know, your friend's like, dude, you got to watch this TV show. It gets good on the fourth fucking season. The beginning is a drag. I'm going to be honest. Like, I think that might have been part of my experience, is that it didn't grab me right away. So I was less motivated to try and understand these complex systems. I also don't understand some of the barriers this game puts up for you right away. And maybe that's just me being a baby, but like
what? I'm just one example. I don't remember.
I'm always over encumbered, more than I ever remember being in Fallout. Now that's always a problem. I don't pick up everything, but this game more than any other, and I know you can upgrade it, Brandon, you can upgrade it. I get it. But like, I don't know. And you can upgrade the jetpack. I get that. But I just, I don't know. Something about it, I'm kind of with Dave a little bit. It has not grabbed me quite yet. And clearly I need to play more.
Maybe not. If you're 10 hours in and you're not enjoying it, then maybe you don't need to play more to enjoy it. What I will say is that I found the main storyline actually pretty good for a Bethesda game, because normally, you know, as we talked about before, that's not the main draw. So I'm actually pretty into the main story right now. But of course the side quests are always really good.
Yeah.
Not always. There's some duds in there too, where you're like, why did I just do that? But there's been some really good ones, some really interesting ones. A lot of the random encounters I've had either in space or on planets that are, you know, procedurally generated, have been really funny, like made me laugh out loud, which, you know, for those of you who know me, I'm not much of a laugh out loud person. So that's been impressive to me. I'm getting a little too into, you're talking about just like wandering around and doing whatever you want. I've been just wandering around planets, scanning things for like hours.
See,
at times
I love doing that. I feel like, what's the reward?
Well, you can sell the scans of the planet once you 100% them.
Okay.
You can discover more materials. You get XP.
Okay.
There's a reward.
And that's just, again, this is such a subjective thing, because I know one of the big popular sort of features of Starfield has been the base building and the ship building, which people have just been loving. That's just not a thing that I've ever enjoyed doing. Plus the ship building on controller is not the most intuitive thing.
I've heard that. Yeah.
Which is fine. It's still good. It's still easy to use and intuitive, but just so much better on mouse and keyboard, or at least it appears so. But one of the thing I wanted to highlight that I really liked is I did enjoy the ship stuff. It felt really cool kind of managing your different systems, and it was simple, but it was so kind of engaging, and it felt like I was actually kind of manning the ship. That's one thing I wanted to kind of highlight there.
I agree with almost all of the criticisms you guys have as far as them, but for whatever reason, they're just not bothering me.
Yeah.
And I think that it's interesting because I think all three of us, at least when we first started playing, were like, a Bethesda game, you know, another Skyrim, another Fallout. And I just feel like, other than the way that, you know, the conversations go and some of the jank and everything, like, this game is not really meant to be played like any of those other games. And it took me a while to figure that out. And once I figured that out and just wanted to play a game and not a Bethesda game, I started enjoying it a lot more. And granted, you know, there's that charm that we all have, that love of Bethesda games that that we really miss, I think. But once I let go of that, I started enjoying the parts of it that were there more than missing the parts that weren't there. But I think when people talk about fast travel, and like you said, Brandon, when you're like 40 hours in, you might not want to do that. You might not want to go, but like you literally can. You can go to a whole different planet. But like, I think it was Alana Pierce who just like set her ship in a path went to bed and woke up. I think from like Earth to Pluto, it took her like 7 real world hours to go there.
Yeah.
And like, if you're talking about the scale of the galaxy, I don't know that you actually don't want to fast travel.
Yeah. I get that, but also like I'm a spaceman. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's something. I think that the feature for fast travel is a much needed feature, but I like the option. Like some of the coolest things is like barreling into a planet in No Man's Sky in your ship and zooming over the ground, you know, as close as you can to the ground and looking for things to explore. Like,
sure. Yeah.
I feel like that sort of thing is completely lost in this. And I get that's not how the game's meant to be played, but it's really hard for me. And I don't think it's necessarily a merit on the game. I think it's a problem with me comparing it to games that aren't it. But I just found that so engaging the way No Man's Sky did that. And they're similar enough that I kind of cannot separate them in my mind, I guess. And it's kind of unfortunately.
I think that's a natural comparison to make, though. Like, that's not an unfound comparison.
Yeah.
Like, they're both space exploration games.
Right.
Yeah, they're going to have some similarities and differences, obviously. Yeah, well,
Are you surprised, I'm the last
bastion of hope. Am I surprised? I don't know if I'm surprised as much as I'm disappointed for you. Not disappointed in you. There's a big difference.
I'm not mad. I'm disappointed.
I'm not mad.
Breaking my heart,
I'm having so much fun that I wish you guys were having as much fun, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but we haven't quit playing video games. We're having fun with other stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
Brandon, you said that you've been playing Starfield. You only played a couple hours. Have you played something else too?
Yeah, honestly, I played about 9 hours of Starfield. And I keep turning it off to play Baldur's Gate.
Let's talk about that.
Every single time I get aggravated with Starfield because I'm just not engaged, essentially. I'm just kind of like, I'm the most engaged when I'm shooting at something, and then everything else that goes outside of that, I'm like, you know, what the fuck am I doing?
Oh, by the way, real quick, you mentioned shooting. Do you remember when Todd Howard was asked? Maybe I said this last week on the episode.
Oh, no, dude. We talked about it. Yeah, go ahead.
You and I talked about it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. At one point, Todd Howard was asked if you could play this as like a no-kill stealth run. And he was like, oh, yeah, there's lots of ways to play it. You could definitely play some, you know, a lot of it stealthy. Bullshit. Like this game, you land on a planet and walk 10 feet and they're immediately aggroed on you.
Right.
And it's like, there's no way you're getting out of that situation without murdering them.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Brandon.
No, you're good. I want to be clear about the Starfield, because I know there's been a lot of, like, once again, unfounded opinions online. I think that overall, very, very happy with the experience. I just don't know why it hasn't grabbed me. And there's been many games like this over the years, but I'm definitely going to give it a go. I'm going to keep trying, boys. So,
as someone, if this helps you, Brandon, as someone who loves the game, I don't think any of your opinions are unfounded.
Gotcha.
I just disagree with some of them. But it, yeah, the discourse is insane.
Yeah. But no, I keep going back to Baldur's Gate 3. I will say there's a huge black stain on Baldur's Gate 3 for me right now. Very similar to the experience that you're having, Ben, in Act 3. It keeps crashing my computer over and over and over and over and over. I mean, sometimes I go like 5 minutes playing and it'll crash my computer. So I have tried many different things. If there's anyone in the Discord who's had this problem, please chime in. Essentially what happens is my computer black screens. I could still hear all the audio, but no matter what I do, no matter what buttons I press, I'm in a perpetual black screen. I have to full hard shut down my PC. So I've tried a couple different things. Nothing seems to help. For a little bit, I dropped myself down to 60 FPS frame cap, and I thought that was helping for a bit. And then last night or the night before that, I went into Act 3 and it crashed anyway. So yeah, very, very unfortunate, because honestly, Baldur's Gate has been, I could say it, easily probably one of my best gaming experiences ever, just kind of out of nowhere. I mean, genuinely.
I'm playing Starfield exclusively, and I'm constantly thinking about Baldur's Gate.
I am just enamored with this game. I can't talk highly enough about it. I just finished Act 2, and I'm finding it hard to believe how interested I still am in this. Act 1, banger. Act 2, banger. And from what I've seen, Act 3 doesn't disappoint. So as long as my my PC can handle it, I will be trying out Act 3. Not that my PC can handle it. As long as the software can handle it.
I was going to say, your PC is no joke.
Yeah. So, really hoping there's some sort of fix here soon, or maybe some suggestions from someone in the Discord. But after some research, I haven't really found much of an answer. But yeah, I can't even describe to you guys, and I really don't think this is a game for most people. But I feel like this is the type of game, you know, when you love a game so much, you want to like Sherpa other people through it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like I want to spread the good word. Like, I'm talking to my buddy Alec, and I'm so tempted to be like, I'll pay for some of your game if you play this with me.
Yeah.
You know, like that sort of thing. But,
sure.
Yeah, dude, I fucking love this game. Larian has really pulled on my heartstrings with this one. So although I wasn't super hot on Starfield, I do have a wealth of things to play. I still am completely cooled on Armored Core. I will say that I've not played it again this week.
Interesting.
I think that now that I've been away from it for 2 weeks, I think I'm the further I get away from not playing it, the more or the less motivated I'm going to be to jump back in. So I really need to get back into it, because I was enjoying it when I was playing it, but Baldur's Gate cannot pull me away. This shit is so good. So,
yeah.
But that's it. That's it, boys.
Nice. And that's the show. That's the whole shebang. Thank you guys out there for listening. We appreciate it. We might just have some upcoming news for you. I think I've said that a couple of times in the last couple of months, but I haven't really teased what it is. So, you just have to wait and find out. If you want to help support us, don't forget, you can go over to patreon.com/handsomephantom. Sign up for as little as $1 a month to help support the show. We appreciate that. And if you go over to handsomephantom.com/discord, we'll be there waiting with open arms and Dave's feet pics to greet you. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time. The HP Podcast is made possible by our patrons over at patreon.com/handsomephantom. The following patrons are at the $5 level or above: Toby Ryland, Edward Walton, Josh Cummings, Jared, Poot, Boots, Passive Pixels Edwin Castillo, Maurice Bays, H-Trons, Nuke Dukem, Derek O, Rainick, Christian Snow, Gravalicious, Benji Bop, and Johnny Waffles.